Hello, everyone. Welcome to The Big Show. Yeah, we're here to discuss all the week's news in tech. And there is actually a bit of news this week, which has also dictated the Summer of Fun topic. Jeff has let me host. Thank you, mate. I really appreciate it.
Oh, sure. I think you'll make a great interim host.
Thanks, buddy. I really appreciate it. Yeah. So, yeah, we're going to talk about something really funny because this week a British consortium has bought Commodore and all of the history with it, all of the game with it, all of the iconography that goes with it, and all of the rights to the merchandise that goes with it. And they've kept it safe for future generations. And I got to say, I remember playing Commodore games when I was a kid, round at Philip Gould's house at 8 Blandford Avenue. And it was awesome. So we're going to do a show tonight based on all of the old platforms for gaming. And it's got to be electronic gaming. So we're not doing something like the thing that I got from Tandy where you pushed a button and you had a roulette wheel that spun around and randomly stopped. Tandy was Radio Shack in America, same thing. So it's got to be a proper console game that played on a TV. And we're going to reminisce about all the stuff that we did for that when we were kids. And the Gen Xers will love it and the Millennials will hate it. We don't care. So, right, I'm going to start. And the very first console I ever had was a thing called a Binatone. B-I-N-A-T-O-N-E. And it basically, it played Pelota, you know, with the
Pong.
Old... Yeah, Pong thing. And it played a single game where you went against the wall and back, which is actually Pelota. So you did like the tennis thing and it did that. And it had a gun that you plugged into it that you'd do like skeet shooting as it went across the screen. And that was my very first ever gaming platform. I think it was about 1978, maybe.
Oh my God, the Benetton looks like a stream deck or something.
Well, no, it's probably brand. I can't believe you didn't have it in America. You must have had it.
No.
We were quite early in a lot of those kind of home TV plugged in games things.
Yeah.
Well, there's a
picture. We were quite early in it.
78, and then I went to Sinclair ZX Spectrum in about 1982, 83.
There's a wiki page on Benetton that shows a picture of the TV Master MK4, Mark IV.
With
some really funny looking controllers.
I'll throw that in the live chat.
Okay.
It's good old Chucky Egg, Manic Miner, if you're getting onto the speckies and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, you can get Manic Miner now on iPhone.
Really? Oh, God. No, that's dangerous. Oh, that's dangerous.
Okay, so if you go, it's a 47-year-old Binatone game console. Now, mine is up in the loft here. I'm pretty sure of it. There's a YouTube video that's showing there. And if you go to images and you type Binatone games, you'll get exactly what it was. It was an orange and black thing with a blue button for reset. And it had these little paddle controllers that came off it. It's the square one that I had with the orange and blue button down the left. And it had there we go. That's the one.
Well, £20 for all that nostalgia.
You could do that. I mean, I reckon. Well, the only problem you've got is you're not going to have an. You're not. Well, exactly. You're not going to have an RF lead, aren't you, into your TV anymore?
Well, now you're going to have to go make a visit to Radio Shack or Tandy for those of you on the other side of the Atlantic.
Yeah.
And although Tandy is here too, not the point. The point is, you can go and get an RF adapter that you can either connect directly into your new TV or you can daisy chain together through other adapters and get it to work.
Yeah.
So Benetton is still in business.
No.
And they make things like face masks with built-in earbuds and baby monitors.
I've put a share link there. Has that come up?
Yeah.
Was it? Can you use that? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, it
Yeah,
works.
that's
Yeah.
that's the one that Ian's put in. That's absolutely the console I had. That was the Link, and it just had shooting, and it had the tennis game, and that was it.
Look at the gun that comes with it. That looks
Well, the gun was
awfully,
authentic.
yeah, it looks pretty real.
It was great.
Carry
I
that
mean, it.
around in
Oh, wow.
America, you could get shot at.
Yeah, clip that off, and it does look like a proper gun.
Oh, I remember those. I remember having to go that round of mate's house. We never had one of those, but I do remember that one.
I
The problem
literally
was.
never heard of this till now, and
No,
it
me
just looks
either.
so
Oh,
gloriously 1970s.
it absolutely was. Yeah, no, absolutely.
Yeah.
The thing was, though, that so basically you were pointing it at a black and white screen, and the gun would only go off if it recognized any light. So I worked out that if someone was sat in front of me, I could point it at the light and it would click and it would register shots. So, because it was
That's
getting light in the
funny.
light sensor at the end. So I always won. I never lost. I just made sure I was behind everyone else when we played it.
That's smart. Yeah, I learned that on the NES with Duck Hunt, the way the light sensor worked, yeah, you just needed to have brighter light. So I never pointed it at the television.
Duck Hunt as a game.
That was an early mod, right? That's how you did mods for games in 1981.
Yeah,
Duck
you used
Hunt and his
light
brother
bulbs.
Mike.
Oh, I see what you did there. I get it now.
I've thrown one of my first games that I remember in the mix. It's like a 90s game, a DOS game. It's Cosmos Cosmic Adventure. I don't know if anybody knows of that or
Oh,
remembers
I
that.
totally forgot about this.
I was a kid. I mean, I was like 10, probably 9, 10 when I played this.
Oh, Apogee. Apogee,
And
you're British.
it was fun. Yeah, it was a really fun game. I don't remember
Oh,
any
yeah.
of the story of it. Like, I read up on Wikipedia on it, and I'm like, really? That was the story? I don't
Oh.
remember it at all.
Oh,
But it was
yes.
fun. It's one of those like scrolling type games, right? But yeah, I mean, it was colors. It had, I remember, Adlib music through your speakers, which was a big thing back then. It
Is
was
it
fun.
pre-Mario or post-Mario?
I think it's.
1992.
Oh, it's post-Mario then.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah, it was a fun game. It's kind of a little, I don't know, alien almost looking like a dinosaur alien, I don't know. It
I
can,
always thought it was a space frog.
yeah, space frog, something like that. It was really fun. It could stick to walls, like it had kind of suction cups as hands almost. It was really fun. And
Yeah,
I
it's
remember
got
playing
toilet
it.
plungers for
Yeah,
hands.
exactly. It was that. It was just a fun game. And I played it on like a, what was it, a 286 computer with DOS on it, something like that. So a long time ago.
Yeah, in the era I started, there was no computers. I mean, literally, there was no computers because the ZX80, ZX81 hadn't come out yet. So.
I just wonder for a game like that one, Patrice, what kind of marijuana do you have to smoke to come up with that concept? Really
I
crazy
mean
game.
the color, also the colors and everything. Yeah, I think
Yeah.
some influence for sure.
Oh man, what if we put suction cups on his hands?
Yeah. But as said, it was a fun game. I remember my uncle brought it. Like he came over with his, like he was still in university getting his, I guess his doctor's or no, his diploma, whatever. And so he would come over with like his old golf, like really old golf, and he had like his computer in it, like a big, massive, heavy tower and like a big monitor with it. For the time, at least big, and he would come when he would come visit. He would bring it, and then he introduced me to the game, and he left me a demo copy, no, a copy, so I could play it on my computer.
Yeah, in the loft here, in the loft space here, the attic, I've got a 21-inch CRT.
Oh,
That
what do
is
we need
pretty big
now?
for the time.
No, well, it's huge. It cost me a
Yeah.
fortune. It must have cost me 800 quid, I think, when I bought it.
Wow.
And I had it for editing photos,
Mm-hmm.
and I can't get it out. I have no idea how I got it in. me and Clarice tried to get it out the other day. We can't get it through the hatch. And the box is whether the monitor actually still works, I don't know, but it's only VGA.
Wow.
Well, and it probably weighs 150 pounds too,
at least, yeah.
Well, yeah.
You don't need to take it out from just up there. Just leave it where it's sitting. It's going to fall through the floor.
No, I thought just dismantle the house. Like, it's easier.
Yeah, no. I did when my parents died, and I started trying to clear the place out. The one thing I did say to everyone, no one died ever saying, I need more shit. No. Because the amount of crap they kept, and I've just like, you know, kitchen appliances and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. We got a thing for piercing eggs so you can blow them. You know, like where you pierce both ends, it's like a little spring loaded thing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So you can blow eggs clear so you've got an empty shell.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sat there going, why?
Exactly. Why?
I could believe it if there was a thing where you wanted to make, because I made like little men out of blown eggs when I was a kid, but no one does that anymore. I mean, I could imagine Clarice's kids go, fellas, should we blow some eggs and make little men out of them?
Nope.
And they look at you
and
like
they
you're
completely
mental.
Misunderstand what you were saying.
Oh
my God, no.
I hadn't realized.
Yeah.
Luckily, I said blow some eggs first.
It's going to be one of those shows, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
God, I'll offer one up now. I had one of my first computers was an Amiga 500.
Yes.
And one of the best games on there was Formula One Grand Prix by a guy called Jeff Crammond.
Mm-hmm.
Crammond, rather. British games
Jeff
developer.
Jeff Crammond?
Crammond. He wrote a ton of games. And a mate and I used to get PCs that we'd connect together with a serial cable and race each other.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
You know, and it was so brilliant of its day.
Serial cable.
Yep. Serial cable.
Yes, I remember that.
Wait, the bits are coming.
The bits are coming. They're on their way.
Tomorrow.
It was a simpler game for a simpler. I mean, look at the link. I mean, you can see the graphics. It was a simpler game for a simpler age. You're racing a Senna and Nigel Mansell and stuff round Corleone.
But 91, the graphics aren't horrific.
No, it was really, really cutting edge for 91. It was super cutting edge. And yeah, I think that one didn't, one of the versions supported a serial link. That one didn't. I don't know the one I found the link for. We had that one, and me and a mate of mine, and we had such fun. But then we did other stuff where you could race together. So you'd do a bit, he'd take over and do a bit, and then you'd go. Oh, it was just such fun. I've got very fond memories of that. Many an all-night gaming session playing this very thing.
Yeah, I remember like going over to like some older neighbor's kid, and they had that game, and we played it. Like, and I was probably like 8 or something. Yeah. So.
I mean, when you were 8, there were some severe German races as well.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, you got Schumacher coming at that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, my pick is a Commodore 64 game, and it's called Summer Olympics.
Oh, yes.
Summer Games, yeah.
Oh, yes.
So I'm going to make myself sound real old, because you're all talking about when I was a kid, I played this game. I was in college, and in 1984, they released this game called Summer Olympics, and my friend had a Commodore 64. I could only afford a VIC-20. Did you guys remember the VIC-20? It was like the poor
VIC-20.
Cousin.
Yeah. I remember VIC-20.
It was basically only good for logging into the school's computer remotely over a modem, and it was a keyboard. That was about all it was good for. Anyway, so the Summer Olympics game had all these different games, and my roommate had a VCR, believe it or not, 1984. He came for money. I didn't. And so we hooked up the VCR in between the Commodore 64 and the TV, so we could record our events. Clever. And then we mimicked TV announcers by looking at replays and making snide comments while we were drinking. And our favorite game was the platform diving. So we somebody would take a turn, and then we'd replay it in slow motion on the VHS. It was fueled really many nights of drunken pleasure. But it was, you know, it was 8-bit graphics, but I mean, it had like 7 or 8 of the Olympic event games in it.
Yeah,
and that's the thing. The interesting thing about that was the fact that at the time the 8-bit graphics didn't matter because the gameplay worked.
Yes,
and one of the really things I can't get over to Carice's kids, and like I'll show him stuff and he'll go, "Oh, the graphics is crap." Yeah, but keep playing it, because if you keep playing it, you'll get frustrated. Mm-hmm. And you'll get more and more frustrated, and you'll play it more and more because the gameplay was perfectly there. There wasn't a focus on graphics. And I think to a certain degree with games now, we went through that kind of Unreal Engine development process where we've got to the stage where graphics are amazing now. And we are getting back to the idea of games have got to be more playable.
I mean, I would say, I mean, it's also always about the expectations, right? I mean, back then there was not, I mean, the real world was there, but gaming-wise, there was nothing better. That was it, and we didn't know that. I mean, we might have dreamed of having something more realistic, like driving in a realistic Formula One car, but that was it. So we had to, that was all we had, and we had to focus on the gameplay. And for a little while, I think we focused a lot on the realism and the engines, because that was the new big thing and the interesting thing. But yeah, now we're, I mean, look at the games. We're so realistic sometimes. It's like, it's frightening.
There's Ellis has got a shooter game that you can use with your your Rift S, and it's very poor graphics relatively speaking, but the gameplay is excellent, and I love it. And I've just bought a Fanatec wheel for outside on the computer. It is the most realistic wheel I've ever used in my life, because it's direct drive. It feels like you're on, you can feel the wheel fight, you know, the tires fighting you when you're doing F1. And the graphics are good, but they don't need to be, because the sensation of the feedback is actually far more enjoyable. And the pedals vibrate as well.
It's like those Sega consoles. You jump in those ones with the steering wheel and you've got the pedals in front of you. It doesn't matter if the graphics are blocky in front of you, because you're having such a good time, because you feel much more connected.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's. Yeah, no. I've always felt that way about Flight Simulator. You know, the graphics
are
pretty good, for, you know, the technology of the day. But they did such a great job in all the controls and the thing, choosing what you control and what you don't control and how the things react to your movement. You know, you see so many pilots, you know, like the pilot from MH370 that had the whole setup in his basement with multiple screens, you know, doing flight simulation. That's pretty realistic, you know. That's an amazing technology achievement.
There's actually there's a place in Hull that's just gone on Rightmove, and there was a story on TikTok about it this week. Because it's got a 737 simulator in the spare room, and they're not taking it with them.
Wow!
So that's going to be a very niche sell, isn't it?
when I was in college, I did a couple of internships at a NASA site here, close, and they had a space shuttle simulator there. But the video was a camera that would move around a model underneath it. It was a simulator only for landing at Edwards Air Force Base. So there were no graphics. It was just a camera that moved based on what the pilots were doing onto they had like a 50-foot by 50-foot layout of what Edwards Air Force Base looked like. And that thing was so clunky. It was a big box and it would move up and down. But, you know,
well, that was the moon landings, wasn't it? It was actually something that was tracking over a surface.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Same idea. I mean, that was 45 years ago.
I remember I don't know if it was 95 or whether it was 311. I'm going to say 311. There was a simulator came out for the space shuttle. And you had to do the big dive to the runway. You couldn't fly in from like several miles out and just kind of glide into it. you had to really kind of pitch it right down steeply, go towards the end of the runway, and then flare horrifically at the end.
Yes.
And kind of drop
it down.
That's
how you do it. It's not a very
good
except
in a space.
No, but like you're learning glide slopes and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But this thing was definitely not glide slope. It was
the angle of attack is a little bit more extreme in a space
it's
shuttle,
huge.
I think.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. So what I'm bringing starts with a console that that I think is pretty obscure, and it's the Odyssey 2.
You had one of those, huh?
Had one of those.
I've never even heard of it.
No, me either.
Well, she's 96 only, so there we go.
Yeah, that would account for it. and so it was pitched as it's a gaming console, but it's a computer. And so it had this this keyboard with a membrane cover, so you had to like push really hard on each letter, and you could even do like assembly language coding on it and stuff. But the thing is, there's no way to save anything that you coded. So if you took the time to do assembly language stuff and make a little program,
you had to write it down.
As soon as you want to do something else, it's over. That's gone. But the game that I remember from this console that I loved playing, and it was absolutely ridiculous, it was called Quest for the Rings. And I couldn't even remember what it was called. I had to do a Google search just on Odyssey games, and I found a page that has a list of all the games. And when I saw the picture, I'm like, ah, that's it. So it's a video game that has a board game that goes with it. And so you're supposed to do this whole board game thing, and you do part of the game on the Odyssey, part of the game with the physical elements on this board. And it was absolutely ridiculous. And we quickly learned that we could just do the video game part and not have to worry about dealing with the rest of it, because it didn't matter for what we wanted.
But that seems quite advanced, because it's not quite ZX Spectrum or ZX80, ZX81 level of programming, is it? But it's not bad.
No, if you look at the graphics, it was actually much nicer than you'd think for that era.
Yeah. Well, that's got pretty cutting edge, man.
It's got a Intel, you know, more advanced version of the 8008. Plus, it's got a Intel display chip in 8244. So that was pretty advanced.
It's, you know, it was an obscure console with, actually, I'll throw a list of all the games in that I found. So that'll be in the live chat now, too. There we go.
It was sold in Europe, by the way.
Yeah, it was, yeah. But that never took. I never even heard of this.
No, and well, this isn't something that I remember asking my parents for. They got it as a Christmas present for my sister and me. And we opened it up, and at first we had no idea what we were looking at, because you know it wasn't an Atari 2600.
It wasn't socks, no.
And it wasn't socks, right? So we had a couple other games for it too that I just do not remember what they were. Quest for the Rings, that's the one I remember. Yeah, good times.
So it cost $180.
Why?
In 1978.
So for my parents, we were living on my dad's government salary. So that would have been, wow, they really splurged on that. that was.
I mean, it was for you and your city, your sister. Let's see, your sister.
Yeah.
You and your city. So,
yeah. and I mean, we had that thing for a really long time. But there you go. Quest for the Rings on the Odyssey 2.
I threw another one in that I think we talked about in the pre-show briefly, or we raised it. Does anybody remember the game Gorillaz? Came with MS-DOS 5 for Microsoft in 1990. It was actually a demo.
I played the crap out of that game.
Me too. I mean, I was like, when it came out, I was 5-ish, something like that. My sister was basically, yeah, I must have been like around that time. My sister was like very little. We probably got it in 92 or something, because I don't remember. She was already playing it, so she must have been like 3. So maybe I was older than that. But anyway, like, it's actually a demo for the new QBasic language that Microsoft wanted to introduce.
QBasic.
Oh, I had no idea.
It was just a demo. They were like, oh, let's play a game. But it's basically two gorillas in like some skyscraper landscape, and they're sitting on the rooftops, and you can basically throw explosive bananas, and you have to select the angle and the speed.
Yep.
And then it throws the banana, and if it hits something, it explodes. And the goal is, I think, to explode the other gorilla. And then if it does,
yeah,
like it did that dance.
The other gorilla. Yep.
I love
that. I forgot about the dance.
That was so much fun.
I
mean, for kids.
This.
For kids,
it's
that was.
Replaced now with like arrow things, but yes.
Yeah, that was so much fun. Like I remember playing
that.
It with my sister. Like we would have like so much fun just playing every night, like in 15 minutes or something. We were not allowed more gorillas.
It's an artillery game, according to the category.
Oh, so it's one of those ones where you got to pitch it at the right angle to land.
Yeah,
it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, artillery game. Yeah.
Yeah, that was fun. Like as I said, and it was like a weird programming language. But I remember like I could not use a computer, but I was able to enter QBasic, and then go to the Gorilla game. That I was able to do.
I completely forgotten about QBasic.
So had I. And,
yeah.
But
that's funny.
Good boy, I remember that. Gorilla. So
remember.
Many bananas.
Reasons.
Do you remember Nibbles? That was the second game that came with it. It's a snake game. It was called Nibbled.
Oh, okay. I do remember that. I just didn't remember that's what it was called.
That's a lesser known of the two. But there was a snake game. Same thing, written in QBasic as a demo. And there was like some financial app, I remember as well, like looking it up later.
Hands up who had a Spectrum of any flavor? No? Ian, you didn't have a Spectrum?
No, I started with the Amiga.
Oh, wow. Jeez.
It's only because we didn't have much money, so it was only until I got a job and was working because we could afford
I couldn't afford a BBCB.
No, schools all had those, didn't they?
They were cool. Yeah, we had the BBCB at school and wrote a traffic light program and stuff like that for it. I had a ZX Spectrum and I wrote a cricket scoreboard application for it in BASIC.
Did you buy the magazines? Mates used to buy the magazines that they'd set there laboriously with the program on the end of there and be pecking away at the keyboard writing these programs.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You get the things to make stuff.
2 hours of sitting putting code in, it goes syntax error at the end.
Yes. That one. Exactly that one.
You have to go back and realize you'd left a full point out or a zero out or something. Just
that exact thing.
Yeah, no, I was. I never did brilliantly with BASIC, but I managed to code my own scoreboard, like I said, when I was a kid.
Nice.
But I've never done anything else since.
Was that a Z80?
No. So I had the ZX Spectrum, which came afterwards. There was a ZX80 and there was a ZX81. The 81 was really loads more functional. And then the Spectrum came along, and it was the first kind of.
You can buy a new Spectrum now if you want. I just dropped a link into the live chat.
Well, you can get emulators, can't you, for Mac and for PC that'll play all the games that were on there. And like I said, Manic Miner and Jet Set Willy was another one that I played. Jet Set Willy was brilliant. You had to fly around and pick up bits for your rocket and drop it down at the bottom and then go and get a fuel pack and then go and get the next section of rocket and drop it back. All the time missing out aliens that were flying by. There was loads of great games on there. I remember a game that was like, you remember the thing in Star Wars where you'd shoot the two riders were running through the trees and in I think it was the Return of the Jedi. About that kind of time, there was a game came out where you would you could zigzag through trees, and it got more dense and more quick as you went along. And the graphics for the trees were just basically two lines with some hatchings in, so you could see tree versus space. And I had a chair that my mother and father used to have in the front room, out in the garage. That was kind of my kid's den, if you like. And I had a joystick that actually the suckers fitted perfectly on the flat arm of the chair. So I would sit in this thing like I'm in the Maxell advert with the guy that's got his arms like this with all the sand running over him. And I'd have this joystick that on my ZX Spectrum. And I was left and right and left and right and left and right, and I got really good at it. It was a brilliant game, and it was the simplest of gameplay options completely, but it was really playable.
That's awesome.
So, what was your first game where you were really hooked? It's like you could not put it down. So I'm going to start with. And it was quite late on, because I think I played this on Windows 95, is Tom Clancy's Rogue Spear. Now, you're all going to go, hang on, Rogue Spear's out now. And it is. But this was the first version that would play on Windows 95. And it was the first. So I'd got Rogue Spear. And then Rogue Spear was one where you could set up breach teams to go into buildings. And you could plan out the mission before you even started. Wow. And you had codes where you could trigger people off basic buttons, you know, F1, F2, F3, F4 would trigger actions.
Well, I remember this one.
And I remember sitting playing this, and I can't remember when it was out, but I used to sit and play it, and my mum would come up behind me and go, do you want a cup of tea? And I used to shit my pants, because I was creeping around a corner waiting to look for a tango who I knew was there, but I couldn't see him, and I was going to have to try and pop out and shoot him. And she'd bang on the door and go, ugh! And the other one was Splinter Cell, which was a great game. And that was the first proper sneak 'em up that I ever played, where you'd be in the dark and you were in black and you could make yourself, you could put IR vision on, and you were just sort of creeping through places, trying to wait till someone finished a conversation, and then you could move forward if they paced off. That was a brilliant game. But those were the first two games where I was absolutely at the point of being obsessed.
I got that way with the Lotus Challenge series. It was a very basic back of the car racing game over a series of courses. And I ended up with all of them over the year. I amassed everyone after I completed each one and got the next one and power-ups and things. It was naff in terms of realism, but God, I was addicted, sat there with me trying to get my little car flying down those little country lanes and whatever, in terrible 16-bit graphics, but those were my addictions.
So you were definitely a racing game, because you were mentioning F1 game earlier.
Yeah, completely.
Oh, that was always my goal. Never go on me wheel, mate. Get yourself a Fanatec wheel.
What was it called? I'm going to Google this thing now.
Fanatec wheel. Fanatec Club Sport.
Tom, you have the one that I also have on my list.
Oh, yeah. So for me, the first game that really blew me away was Flight Simulator on my Windows 95 machine.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the first time first I bought the software, and the manual was about 3 inches thick.
Oh, I remember that, yes.
And I installed it, and the first time I fired it up, it was like, oh, my God, look at the graphics and the controls. And, you know, there's a reason why the manual is 3 inches thick, because you could control most stuff. And I think...
But you could pass your level one, couldn't you?
Yeah.
You could literally pass your level one on Microsoft Flight Simulator. It was probably that accurate.
Probably. And it took a long time just to do really basic stuff.
I remember Sharon, for Father's Day, bought me a flight simulator experience at Baggington Airport, which is out in Coventry. And there was a guy there who did requals for airline pilots and stuff. And he was using nothing more than Flight Simulator, but he got the whole cockpit laid out and everything. Right. And so I went down there, and it was like, great, I'm having a go at this. And he said, do you want to have a go at landing? I'm like, yeah, okay. So he set up a landing program for me to land in Switzerland. And I landed it, and he went, that's the best I've seen so far. Have you ever flown a plane before? I went, no. And he said, well, how have you learned how to come in at the right flight simulator.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, right, yeah, that's.
So,
and you could, it was so accurate. Go on, Ray.
I mean, it is quite accurate for some things. And I mean, that's why a lot of airline pilots do train with flight simulators. And I mean, they're more advanced maybe, but it's the same principle. But it's not the same. There's still a lot of like things you have to hear, to feel, to have like the accuracy that a flight simulator will not give you. And that's why you still train a lot. I mean, that's why every pilot still learns in the real world. You don't go in a simulator until later on to do certain things that you couldn't be doing usually, like training, hey, everything is falling off the plane, what do I do, basically? That you can't do in a real plane. So, but it's, I'm not saying it's not realistic and not great, but it's not 100%. It's still a simulation. It's still not the same.
You
still
pass.
Have to learn things. No, you still have to learn things that you.
You can pass your flight level one in Microsoft Flight Simulator for achieving stable and level flight. Yes, you can. Google it, mate.
Yeah. Okay.
I
mean,
I was right.
To be honest, so stable flight up somewhere in the air is not that hard.
Well, that's flight level one.
Okay,
FL1.
I didn't know that. Like, you cannot get your license with that. That's my point.
No, but you can pass FL1.
Yeah,
on Microsoft Flight.
But honestly, even
ever sitting behind a plane.
Okay, that I can believe
because
you can also just go up in a plane and you will.
And
it's
been
like
that way since about 2003.
Yeah. Yeah, but anyway, I'm a big fan of that game too. Like I played the 95 version. I think we had that somewhere. Was it even a Christmas quiz last year that it was like 13 different versions, I think, something like that. There's been a lot of Flight Simulator versions, 11, 13.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what the version, I think, was it 1999?
The 10 version?
2001?
The 2000 version? The 2000 version.
2001.
Yeah, that was great.
And the 2001 version, I had loads of, because there was a big open community as well.
Yes.
You could get planes, you could get the Blackbird, you could get gliders, you could get tons of stuff.
You could, with the internet, get realistic
there,
weather.
Which really pisses me off.
Yeah, you could get like real weather already back then if you had an internet connection, like stuff like that. It was really great. That's why I was thinking, like, for me, this is one of two games that I think I was really into. I mean, I would do real time, whatever, 8-hour flights. Go up, put on a 777, go up, put the autopilot on, program the course, and then go to bed. And then like a couple hours later, like wake up and be like, okay, now we're ready to land, and then do the landing. And like, that's how I did it. And landing was manual, for sure.
I flew a Spitfire through Tower Bridge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh. Cool.
That's so cool. Yeah. So
that was a great program. And like I said, it really annoys me that community aspect of being able to download, there was free forums where you could get planes and landscapes and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And they canned all that. You can't do it anymore, which is
But
really
there's
annoying.
A different community these days. So what I really like about these days is it's more than pilots. There's people doing air traffic control. There's people who are doing ground stuff. It's getting more and more closer to like what you would really do. And you can do, I mean, honestly, some of the stuff you see on Instagram where it's like, oh, like this accident happened, whatever, and it's all fake because it's flight simulator, and someone just like it's so realistic, it's really hard to tell that it's flight simulator. So that's
there's people who are doing it and doing it really well, and there's other people who are just beaten by their mother and superiority complex.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But it's, as I said,
they just want to tell people off.
I like the community aspect that it has these days, where it's more like the real like pilot community in a sense.
The thing that's nice now as well is you can fly in real weather.
Mm-hmm.
So if you click realistic weather for your location, and there was a ton of a hurricane. I can't remember which one it was, but there was a hurricane that flew up off off Florida about 6 years ago, and everyone just got in a plane and flew into the middle.
Which is not a good idea. Not a good idea. Yeah. No,
well,
but
how are you going to find out what it's like flying in a hurricane?
I really like that because it also shows you how much of flying is actually influenced by the weather, because like you cannot fly the way you want to if there's like a thunderstorm, for example. And then you have to fly around it, and how you figure out how you fly around it and all that. So I really like that. The other one I wanted to mention, Do you guys remember Age of Empires?
Yes.
Like a strategy game. I love that game. That was probably for me.
Arictus.
Oh, yes. Ah, that was so fun. Yeah, I remember.
You pencil it over and go, Hi-tay! Arictus.
Yeah, I remember the very first one, and I played, I think, till like the mid-2000s. I think I played every extension, every new version. Like, it was just so much fun. Got kind
yeah,
of
yeah, there was a lot of problem with limitation with that, wasn't there, on terms of difficulty? Because as soon as you made your monument, if your monument stood for 100 years, the game would stop. And
It got a little bit too easy.
The early versions, yeah.
I always gave up. I always got too impatient with those and kind of gave up and said, that bollocks to it.
I played nights and weeks and like everything. Like
the thing with those kind of games, and this is true of a lot of games now, actually, in that kind of ilk, you play on like the easiest level, you smash it. And it's boring. So you put it up like, and you literally sat there with the mouse going, I only want to go up this much, and then you can't win.
It's the AI player, at some point I figured it out, but the AI players were cheating like crazy, so it was really hard to win against them. Because they could see the map and all of that, in the early versions especially. Like AI players, in quotes, the computer players. Like you're right. It was hard. I played it even against some people because I think at some point they introduced multiplayer mode. I don't remember when, which version, but they did in later versions. So it was really fun.
And when you launched a boat, what did they shout?
I don't remember.
Alame! And you got the sound of the oars hitting the surf.
Yeah, I don't remember that, but it's like I said, it was a really, really fun game.
Ingrained in my memory. I forgot I knew that.
Wow. Yeah.
I'm
going on Mastermind, Age of Empires.
Yeah. I like
year.
Oh yeah. I just like the building aspect. Like the war and whatever else, like not so interested. I just wanted to build the craziest like setups and walls and all of that.
We can't talk about Age of Empires and not talk about SimCity.
Oh, yeah.
SimCity was fun.
And The Sims, kind of, out of that.
Sims was great as well.
Yes.
I remember The Sims went through one evolution where it said, like, pick your Sim and pick your Sim partner. And you'd the Sim partner was AI controlled or computer controlled. And I remember picking me and my ex-wife. And the whole game, all we did was fight.
Should have told you that.
It was very realistic.
No, but it was like, I'm a Leo, she's a Taurus. We stuck us together in the same house, did nothing but fight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's funny.
That was the other. SimCity, I played a little bit, but The Sims, because again, the building aspect for me. I wanted to build, I wanted to like run families, I wanted to lock people into houses and remove everything. Like, yeah, I did all of it.
Yeah.
I bought
Sims, but definitely SimCity.
Mm-hmm.
I bought SimCity.
Go ahead. Super fast. There was one where it was like a hotel as a city.
Mm-hmm.
And you had to build each level, and I really got into that one too. But I can't remember what that was called.
It was a building, wasn't it? You had commercial, you had domestic and residential, and you could put escalators here. I remember the game that you're talking about. But I can't remember the bloody name of it for the life of me.
Yeah, I can't remember either.
Oh, Sim Tower.
Anyhow, Tom.
Sim Tower.
Sim Tower.
I bought Sim Tower.
That could be it.
Have a Google while Tom talks.
I bought SimCity for my nephew, who at the time was probably seven years old. And he had, I can't remember what computer he had. I think a Mac, maybe. And as soon as he found out that the SimCity had some sort of a monster that would blow up buildings, that's all he has. He never built anything. He just walked around, blew up stuff, and I said, okay. Maybe next time I'll get him a baseball game.
There's a thing we
never built anything.
Ellis grew up in the Phantom Menace era, and all he wanted to be was Darth Vader.
It's so much more fun to the bad guy, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you can get away with so much more.
Exactly.
Yeah, I kept saying, you know, Colin, you can put up a building and put out a farm and get people. He's like, yeah, but watch this.
A GTA was the same way. You just run around smashing everything up.
I didn't like
because
that.
Because I didn't either. My lad played it, and that's what he used to do, go around smash everything up. And that was just kind of the way it was. You know, it's that thing. You want to be the bad guy. You want to do the bad thing.
Did you see that GTA 6 is now nearly ready or ready? And it's cost $2.7 billion.
Took years and years and years, right?
For what, creating the world, or?
But they reckon they're going to make $7 billion in the first six months. Wow.
It wouldn't surprise me. There is insane. So much love for that game. So much love for that game. That.
I loved GTA 5, but I mean, Ellis and Briny both play it. They've got their own drug cartel, which I'm kind of proud of. they steal their own cars and refurb them. Take the VIN numbers off. The number of prostitutes my son's killed. Wow.
All kinds of craziness.
Well, on a lighter note, Lode Runner.
Go on.
I was so hooked on Lode Runner on the Apple II. And part of what made it so much fun for me was that there's a level editor. And you could get other people's levels. You could make your own levels. And just making my own Lode Runner levels and then sharing them with friends was so much fun. But I played the crap out of that game. And then later on the Mac, Marathon, Marathon ended up being kind of a seminal game in that it changed a lot of how companies looked at developing first-person shooters. But both those games, I played so much. It's a wonder I didn't destroy my keyboards just from playing those games.
So did Marathon precede Wolfenstein?
Another classic.
Yeah.
Because that really Doom is a classic, isn't it?
Doom and Wolfenstein.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Doom
I
get Wolfenstein was right up as well. There.
I remember the big scandal when they discovered it on our school computers. Computer pool. Like, I mean, it's Germany, right? So
didn't someone hack a fridge, an IoT fridge, able to play Wolfenstein?
Probably.
Without a
doubt. I think every device has been hacked to play Doom.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Doom was awesome. Doom was really good. I love the way that your little icon guy would, in the bottom corner for your health, would just kind of get...
Oh, I forgot about that.
Get more broken as you are.
Get more and more broken. More and more blood would appear.
Yeah. I think another thing about Marathon that I loved, or that attracted me to it, was they released a level editor for that too. And apparently that's a thing that I really enjoyed doing with games, was making my own levels. Mm-hmm. Probably part of the reason why I enjoyed SimCity and SimTower.
Yeah, same.
Yeah. But we were talking just before we started about Lynx Golf, Microsoft Lynx Golf 2003. They brought out a course editor there, and people would make courses, and you could download the course. And literally, there was courses that were on my doorstep. Not the Belfry was one, but there was the Etterbaston Golf Club, which is an exclusive course. You can't play there unless you're a member. And I could play on it on Microsoft 2003, and it was a wicked simulator. It was really good.
Awesome.
And you had all these courses you could download from the community, and that's been lost because of everyone going, well, actually, we're going to charge £60 for the game, and we make no money on that, but we've got to sell skins for... And Ellis used to buy stuff for Call of Duty, and he'd buy this, oh, I've got a skin for a gun. I'm like, dude, it's a BMP file.
Mm-hmm.
If you can find the BMP file and send it to me, I'll make you custom BMP files all you like, because I'm a whiz in Photoshop, and you can still save BMP.
Yeah, so true. Mm-hmm. I threw another one in the chat real quick, Command and Conquer, because I remember I didn't care about the gaming, about the war part. I just really loved building things. It had a level editor. I don't know which version, but there was one version, maybe the second or third, that had a game level editor or like a map editor.
No, Command and Conquer is a great game.
Yeah.
Yes. Another one of the best. It came from, again, Amiga and all that sort of thing. It had Command and Conquer on and it all came.
Oh, Virgin Interactive. It was a Virgin Interactive game. Well,
I had loads of good titles as well.
I'm quite proud of us that we haven't got to this stage in the conversation and mentioned any Nintendo games. But you can't not tip a bit of a nod to Donkey Kong and Mario, can you? And particularly Mario Kart, because it's one of the most playable driving games out there.
Never cared too much about it.
We did have a very brief Nintendo discussion because I mentioned the Duck Hunt game on NES. And you focused on the game name.
Yes. Sorry. And the other one's got to be Street Fighter, surely.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Oh, I forgot about that.
And I suppose Sonic, if you're going for the full sort of set of things.
Yeah, Mega Drive games. Sonic was seminal.
Sonic was the thing. Yeah, definitely. Sonic was the thing. I played a fair bit of that at one point, Sonic.
Yeah, I had a Mega Drive. I've still got it somewhere upstairs.
So the first computer game I ever played was on a TI Silent 700 terminal, and it had a keyboard but no display. It had thermal paper was the interface, and it was connected to IBM mainframes, and it had a football game, American football game, where you play against the computer. You would enter a play if you're on offense. Pass, yep. Run, punt, whatever.
Blitz.
And then it would tell you the result of the play. And now it's first and 10.
So it's about as interesting as the real game.
No, the Madden game is pretty good.
In 1975, it was pretty amazing in 1975 to have something like that. You know, basically for a computer to respond to you in almost real time.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, we all had the kind of Dragon Quest things, didn't we? Where we were like, you're in a room, etc. There's a door, there's an emerald crystal, etc. So.
Zork.
Yeah,
Zork. Zork was a great
I was just
game.
Thinking about it. I never did the text-based games, but there's a quest game that I remember playing, but I have no clue what it was called. It was like, it was kind of really beautiful drawn. There were characters. It was like a proper, like in the 90s, like a proper visual game with colors and everything. I do not remember I don't remember what it was called. Something
but
quest.
But in the 1990s before
Adventure
real-time
quest,
existed.
Something like that.
But there is something to say for the text-based games. You know, you're not distracted by all the graphics and moving around and things flittering on the screen. It was just, how do I get out of this friggin'
green, room? Green and white.
And what was the secret word? X, Y, Z, Z? Was the secret code in Zork to get something?
Oh, I don't remember.
X, Y, Z, Z,
I just remember the Konami code, but that's a different one.
Cheat codes killed gaming, didn't they?
Yeah.
I'm not so sure. I love cheat codes in The Sims. Like, unlimited money, and I can just do whatever I want. That was awesome.
Yeah, because you love the building. That's true, yeah.
Yeah.
But that's just Minecraft. And Minecraft's another one we haven't mentioned.
Oh, yeah.
Minecraft in creative mode as opposed to survival, I suppose.
Yes.
So that was the best thing that he ever did, was make sure there was a creative mode instead of survival.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, me and Ellis built a model of the Titanic in creative mode.
Wow.
Only on the outside.
I remember you talking about that.
Yeah, we didn't do it on the inside. And I made an Angel of the North in Minecraft as well.
Wow.
But
someone did a Starship Enterprise in Minecraft.
Oh,
that's correct. Wow. Oh, I forgot about that. And it was huge, wasn't it? I mean, it was like,
it was
to scale. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because when we did the Titanic, we worked out that a cube was a meter.
Mm-hmm.
So we built it, you know, it was dead easy. And there was MC Edit as well that you could use to lay out loads and loads of bricks just to do the base and then the sides and that kind of stuff.
Was it taking hours, though?
Yeah, we were at it for a long time. And we built, because Bryony was really into Frozen. And she had a little computer that she could play Minecraft on, one of my old laptops. So me and Ellis built her a world in the thing that we were in for was like an ice palace for Frozen, which you love.
Nice.
I've still got it. I've still got all of it. And I can start it up, and it's on this computer now as well. So I can, I've maintained it because I just didn't want to lose it because it was my kid's history, if you like.
Yeah.
No, that, I get it. That makes sense.
Cool.
Tom,
so,
I have a question.
Here we go then. Oh, go on.
Yes.
And this one's super fast. Since you did the mainframe gaming, did you play Star Trek on a mainframe?
The game was there, but I was more of a sports guy than a Star Trek guy, so I didn't.
You
play
missed
it.
Out.
Was it good?
We discovered that, okay, so there was one teletype terminal in the school that hooked up to the county mainframe, and we discovered that it had the Star Trek game.
And what so could possibly go wrong?
Right. So here's these kids just hooked straight into the county's mainframe, and we're playing Star Trek.
Nothing but time.
We went through boxes of paper.
No roads got repaired that year. Nope. The traffic signals worked badly. Yeah.
Yes.
Well,
but Jeff got to play his Star Trek game.
Yep.
That's why if you lived through that era, the premise of the War Games movie was not that far-fetched. It wasn't that hard to get into computers. There was hardly any security in most of them. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So when we come back, we're going to do a question, which is, you are cast away on a desert island. You have a computer which has an infinite battery supply, but you have no internet connection. There is only one game that you can play for the rest of your days on this desert island. What is it? And everyone has to answer, and they can't give two. Crap. They've got to give one single answer. Crap. But this podcast is brought to you by All Technologies Limited. They are a great firm here in the UK. They do construction monitoring, and they help companies be more efficient on construction sites, and they also help them be more safe on construction sites. Their cameras measure noise, dust. They're going to measure light this year as well. Temperature, pressure, humidity, dust levels, and it's brilliant. When you get the camera out there, you can make sure you're compliant with local environmental legislation, and also if the local councils give you what's called a Section 61 notice for noise compliance, you can prove it. They're actually going to my local rugby club this week to do their beer festival because they want an outdoor sports license. So they'll be able to do events outside if the noise levels are perfect. And that's the kind of thing it does. It just helps you make sure you're compliant. Go to awtechnologies.co.uk and see what they could do for your project. Right, here we go. We're going to start with Patrice. Right, Mrs. You've got one game only, no internet connection, so it can't be a modern game that requires it. What are you going to play for the rest of your days on the desert island?
That's a really tough one. I think it's either Age of Empires or it's Flight. It's either Age of Empires 2 or
Flight. Age of Empires is a great show.
Yeah, I think I'll do Age of Empires 2, but the second edition, because the first one was kind of...
That's fair. Well, that's fine. Good choice. Right, Ian, yours?
Me? I would go for the original Gran Turismo with TV and everything else, and I would be there forever. There's all the license tests. There's all the race. There's infinite. I mean, you know, it was going to be a car thing, because cars are my thing. And I will spend the rest of my time seeing how much quicker and how faster my laps can become.
Why have you not got a steering wheel in the game, in that little man cave that you've got?
Because I don't game anymore. I should do, probably. I know it's got a lot of
should.
But I don't game
mate,
anymore.
Next time you're in Birmingham, come and have 2 minutes on my Fanatec, mate, and you will be hooked. You'll buy one.
You'll buy one.
I might take you up on that next time.
You and the missus will be having a stern conversation about why you spent £1,000 on a steering wheel for a PC and another £2,000 on a PC that will run it. But you've downloaded F1 2025 and you're loving it.
Mm-hmm.
And also, your pectoral muscles improve massively because it's frigging hard work turning, especially when you get it wrong.
Oh, yes. Oh, and you get the kickback then, as it throws you back. You
oh, yeah, no, absolutely. If you bust a wheel, you could bust a wrist.
Oof.
Yeah.
Oof, yeah. Oof, oof.
Tom, what's yours?
This is a tough one. I think, you know, the life simulation might be good if I was stuck on a desert island.
Not Second Life. Game. That was another game that was a bit of...
Oh my
Sports.
god, horrible. But that beats internet.
Oh, wow.
That beats internet.
You know, I love sports games, but I'd probably get tired of it. And the other idea is sort of a brain game to keep you occupied. I think I'd have to do Flight Simulator.
Yeah.
That was my other option.
Fantasize you could leave.
You know, I could spend all day, you know,
flying
around the globe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would have been my second choice, I'll tell you.
But you could click the real world thing, and maybe you could see a boat, and you might plot your escape.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have internet, so.
At least you know which direction to fire the flare.
That's right.
Jeff, what's yours?
I actually had to think about this one, and I'm going to go with No Man's Sky. And the reason is
now,
because...
Now, Ellis loves that game, and I never got into it.
So the way I got into it was I switched it just into that the build don't worry about stuff mode. And as soon as I did that, it became this infinite galaxy that I can just go and explore and do stuff in. If I want to interact with people, great. If I want to take on a mission, I can do that. Otherwise, I just go around and do my thing, and I build stuff. And since it generates the galaxy for you on the fly, there is no end point. And so I would have this whole galaxy to go play in.
Brilliant. I was going to pick Link's 2003, but the second you pick No Man's Sky, I'm going to pick something completely different that was on the ZX Spectrum, and it was Privateer. And it was exactly the same as that, but you owned a freighter and you could choose whether to take legal or illegal stuff and fly between systems.
Yes.
And it had the guy that played, who was the protagonist in, or the antagonist in what's his actor's name? In Back to the Future.
Doc Brown.
No, the antagonist. Oh my god.
The old man.
No, the young lad who had the shit tipped into his.
Right.
But. Oh, what's his name? Who's farted? Jesus.
Oh my god! I can't.
Wait,
believe...
Are you talking about Michael J. Fox? Or
No, the punk kid that had the speedster that he.
Yeah.
Had the manure dumped in it.
Buzz, but.
Biff.
The actor that played Biff used to do the cutscenes in Privateer. He was your mate. And he would come back and tell you that he'd been somewhere and he'd seen this, and you could go there and they might get it. And Privateer was an absolutely brilliant game. And I was really gutted that there was never any other platform that took it up or took up the
principle. Wing Commander Privateer, right? That's the one.
I don't remember the Wing Commander bit, but I remember Privateer. But you had a vessel, and you could do illegal runs if you wanted, but you run the risk of getting pulled over. You used to get pulled over on your legal cargo and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Privateer was brilliant. But if I can't have that, I'm going to have Lynx 2003 with all the courses and the course editor.
Nice.
Where can we get a hold of you, Patrice?
Well, every week here on the big show on Thursdays, the Mac show on Fridays, so tomorrow as well. Everything I'm doing on my website, thepatrice.com, will take you there. And Jeff and I have a little podcast called Retro Rewatch. We do rewatch retro TV shows. We're doing Stargate SG-1 right now. We did a little bit of, we did one episode of Gilmore Girls. We even cross-posted one, or will cross-post. No, actually, we did cross-post one episode from The Summer Fun. I think there's a second one coming, or I don't remember. But the next episode that is out is Season 3, Episode 3, Fair Game, tomorrow. So look out for that.
Ian, where can we get you, mate?
Me, I can be found on LinkedIn, Ian Grant. I work for Veeam. Otherwise, look around for me on other places, TIOA, BOA, Instagram, and Blue Sky, and Threads. I'm around on those as well, occasionally posting. And of course, here on Thursdays.
Of course. Mr. Ferry, where would you be?
You can find me on Mastodon. I am TomF at sfba.social. Thanks, Ewan.
Excellent. And Jeff?
Jay Gamut on the socials, Mastodon, Blue Sky, and PixelFed. That's where I'm posting most of my stuff right now. Then for shows, Patrice already mentioned Retro Rewatch. And Patrice, I can't wait to hear what we have to say about this week's episode of Stargate. Then other shows, Chuck Joyner's Mac Voices Live, Dave Ginsburg's In Touch with iOS, here on the British Tech Network for The Big Show and The Mac Show, of course. And then Brian Chaffin and I do The Context Machine. Ewan, where can we find you?
I'm still on Twitter periodically. And I'm also on Blue Sky as Ewan Rankin. And I'm on Instagram as The Ministry of Image, where I don't post enough about my photography work, because I should do more. Because I'm actually quite good at it. And the images are taken. I've been working for a skirting board firm this week.
Nice.
I've been taking pictures of skirting board for 2 days. And it's, so the thing is, they said, like, we want to do something different, because everyone takes like a little tiny sample picture. So it's like a, you know, sort of 4 inches square kind of thing. And then they do the end profile.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to them, why don't you lay them out like a fleet of cars would be laid out? What do you mean? You know, so you got like the long sedan on the left hand side, and then just slowly rotate the cars back till the smallest car that they do is pointing right at the camera.
Mm-hmm.
So I did a picture of it, and they were like, oh, wow. There you go. Skirting you boards go. Can look great.
Skirting.
We'll be back again next week. I'm in Bournemouth with Clarice and her kids, but I might be able to sneak away for a bit, so I might join. But nice. On my phone, that's the only negative. But I will join.
Nice.
And Mac Show's back tomorrow. I'm at the cricket tomorrow. I could dial in if you want. I'll take the microphones with me. Could be fun.
Give us some live cricket coverage.
Oh, definitely.
I might do a CES live coverage for you and keep you updated on the scores as we go through the show.
Excellent. Excellent.
The usual hosts will be back next week. Normality will be resumed, and there won't be any offensive language. There you go. Have a great week. Thanks for listening. See you next week.